Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Thomas.
And this is the Unbossing Podcast.
A show about unleashing the full potential of every organization.
Dear Jennifer,
hi,
welcome
Jennifer.
Back on this rerun of a conversation, a fantastic and amazing conversation we had at the end of last year. And I'd like to kick off with the following fact, that is that you said something in our last conversation that inspired me. That inspired me to turn it into action. And it was the yes and technique. So one of the three personal goals that I have set for myself in 2021, which is visualized not only in my personal project management tool, but I have papers hanging here. It comes like an email in my mailbox. I snooze it, so I'm constantly reminded about it, is that I want in 2020 to make the yes and technique just my natural reflex to anyone, anything that someone says. And I've heard it before we talked, but the conversation with you really inspired me to put it into action, and I'm so grateful for that. So maybe for the listeners, can you, from your perspective, explain one more time why this very simple two words, yes and, is so important to you and what it has done for you in your life and profession?
So I've been quiet as Nick has been explaining this to me, and quiet for a reason, because I deeply wanted to listen, but I've been doing my happy dance as he's been explaining, because this is such a joyful moment and a joyful piece of information to know to start the podcast. And there is no greater excitement when you have an idea and you want to share that idea for the greater good. For the greater good of the people and organizations, for the work we're able to do, that you're sharing and spreading that idea. So that's very exciting. So yes, and two simple words. You know, there's 171,468 words in the English language, and everyone has a favorite word, right? My two favorite words are really yes and. And it's that, you know, yes signals agreement. Yes, you know, says that I've heard you, it states an intent, and it's magical actually when you say yes and, because together those words can create anything from nothing. And the antithesis of that clearly is yes with another word, which is yes, but, which can actually destroy anything that your mind can imagine. And so it is with that, you know, this power of yes and to build, to collaborate, to create, to innovate, even disrupt sometimes, that you can use these words. And they're, of course, words. And bigger than the words themselves, it is a mindset. It is a mindset that is all about let's keep building, let's keep collaborating. And in a time, you know, we're in January of 2021, we've just come off of an unprecedented year of having to go virtual with every single team possible. And the power of yes and to keep creating and keep engaging teams remotely, I find really, really important. So that's, you know, Nick, that's super thrilling that you're going to take this on this year. Yes, and for those of you who don't know or haven't been exposed to the world of improvisational comedy, yes, and is in fact the first rule of improv comedy. And before I lose all of you, before I lose all of you that it's all about performance art, it's just as relevant as we're describing here in a business environment or professional environment or in a leadership environment as it is as a performer on stage doing improvisational theater or comedy. I think, you know, the rules of improv comedy have big game when we're talking about unbossing, the power of yes and to create. The second rule is listen and be present, which, you know, we speak of mindfulness, for example. They're all about the same. It's being absolutely present so that you can create in the moment. And that's what we're asking of all of our team members. It's what we're asking of our organizations. Be present. Don't multitask. Don't think ahead, but collaborate in the moment. The third rule of improvisational comedy is don't be a star and serve others. And what that means is that you're effectively in an ensemble. You're in a team, but more even noble than a team, you're in an ensemble and everyone is there to support everyone else. So we don't have this diva behavior. We don't have this star behavior. It is that each and every person has a role to always support the greater good of the entire organization. And then lastly, it's fail with joy. And if there's ever a time in our lives when we need to really embrace that agility and fail with joy, it's right now. And I love that those lessons of improv comedy are just as relevant on the stage as they are in our organizations.
Mm. Wow, it's even more. I have an even bigger surprise than I thought for you, Jennifer, because I forgot all about rule number two and rule number three. But you want to know what my personal goal number two and number three is? My personal goal number two also pops up in my email box as a snooze every day to remind me is attention is doing one thing at a time, which is basically the second rule, being present. And the third one is I'm here to empower people around me, which is, as you explained, rule number three. So it's not that you inspired me just with one action. It's the three actions, the three personal goals of 2021 are inspired by our last conversation. So thanks again for that.
Yeah, wonderful.
Can I interrupt
your party shortly?
Yeah.
Jennifer. Yes. Before we go here very deeply into improv and mindset, I have to ask again this question from my daughter. Jen, what is it what you're doing? Please explain it to my 11-year-old daughter.
So my day job, I can explain to your 11-year-old daughter, is that I make sure that children who need medicine are able to get access to their medicine. Getting access to their medicine means we create the conditions that allow them to actually have it in their hand. So I work in an innovative pharmaceutical company specializing in rare diseases, most of them pediatric, children's rare diseases, small biotech, mid-sized biotech. And we make medicines for children that have no other options. Who are very sick and need these medicines to survive. And the kind of job that I have, which is being a global head of patient access and patient engagement, means that I get this great honor of making sure that my company gets it right so that we get the drugs to the children and the patients who need them most.
Wow. Nick, I don't know what you say, but this is, if I ever heard of purpose, that's what it is.
Mm. Yep. It's dropping from the ceiling. I don't know if that's an English expression. Translation from Dutch.
But it should be dropping from the ceiling.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. And Jennifer, it's also amazing how clearly you explain it.
You took over the team, was it 2 years ago? 3 years ago?
About 18 months ago.
18 months ago.
Yeah. 18 months ago, I came in. So, you know, first of all, thank you for saying what you did. The function of patient access or market access in the biopharmaceutical business is by definition a quite technical one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's loaded with purpose and it's loaded with strategy. It's loaded with strategy in terms of defining the entire company strategy for how are you going to achieve that moment where that patient achieves and receives that medicine. Along the way, there are a lot of milestones that are extremely technical in terms of health economics, pricing, you know, data generation. Did we get the endpoints right in the clinical trial that we've designed that are going to be relevant for a payer, a government, and a patient? So they're very technical conversations and decisions and strategies that must be implemented to make this happen. And as you can imagine, as a result, this functional area is very technical, as I've said. And the people who are promoted as leaders in this functional area are often, by definition, extremely functional.
Experts.
They're experts, right? And it's a fairly new functional area in this industry. I mean, it's probably been well established for about the last 15, 17 years. And as a result, it means that very technical people are promoted to levels of leadership in that function. And then they sit on, you know, a board, they'll sit on a management team, they'll sit on a franchise team, and they're there to deliver a functional perspective. And I think often what fails is that they're losing the enterprise perspective because they're only representing the functional perspective. And I think, you know, you were asking me when I joined my own company that I'm in now, that
yes.
interaction I had with my team was a very interesting one. Because I had to come up technically as well in this field, but I also invested in, you know, developing my own leadership skill as along the road as well. And I wanted to distinguish myself as a leader in that functional area in my industry by being a leader as well as being a functional leader, as those two things are quite different. So the first time I met with my team, they assumed they were used to having a long chain of leaders that were health economists, that were specialists, that were very technical. And so they asked me the question, so which technical area are you the specialist in? Which is the area that you know best? And which is the area that you know least? And how are you, how much do you want to be on top of me as I do my job? You know, each person was kind of worried, like, oh no, it's a new boss. Is she going to try to come in and do my job for me? Is she going to micromanage me? And I took a step back and said, that is not what I'm here for. This is who I am. This is what I care about. Here's my purpose. I'm here to support you in doing your job and making sure that you are doing, being the best human you can be, being the best autonomous leader yourself. I'm here to support that. Yes, I know the functional area. But what's really the work I need to do is to support you in becoming the best leader that you can be so that you can also lead your enterprise from where you sit inside my team.
Jennifer, that's interesting. So you came in clearly with an unbossed philosophy. And I would like to ask the question again, was that exactly what your team certainly didn't expect it, but I understand you also in a way that everybody in your team was happy when you disclosed your philosophy. Is that right?
I think they were, the first emotion I think was surprise. It just wasn't what they were accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
The second emotion was kind of, can it be like this?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think as the time moved forward, it was an excitement because they realized that I was there to make them better, better managers, better leaders, better purpose fulfillers. And as we focused on fulfilling those purposes, there clearly, if you call it a high performance team, there was great excitement in the team. The performance of the team was exceeding expectations. And again, this is, if we go back in time, this is September of 2019. So by the time that the pandemic set in and we had, you know, work from home permanently, most of my team already, it's a very dispersed team all over Europe. So we're actually not always working together in the same space. So we're already very dispersed. And then we became 100% work from home, 100% digital. We had established a way of working, a way of collaborating, a cohesion and a system of trust with each other. And they trusted me that I was there to empower them and to, you know, back off effectively and let them get out of their way to let them do their job that they needed to. And I think through the pandemic, as we're still in the pandemic, but as the pandemic started rolling out, I knew we were able to continue to deliver what we needed to deliver because we had the fundamental elements in place. We had purpose, we had empowerment, we had trust, we had engagement with each other.
I fully agree with you, Jennifer. And it sounds to me that you were also in the lucky situation to have a team or to take over a team where everybody also has the potential, willingness, and ability to work in such an unbossed way, which is exceptional under my experience.
Yes. Jennifer, could you share with us some tactics onto how you started implementing this philosophy with the results you've just shared?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of those things that we did that we started when we met before we started recording was we did a check-in. How do we feel? What's on our minds? As a mindfulness practice, we initiated this as well, which they'd never done. And you know, when you start something, going to be a cast of characters. There's going to be some who are really eager, some who are very academic about it, wanting to understand the science behind it, some who are having nothing with it, eyes rolled, et cetera. And some who just go along to see, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. So we started to do this where we had mindfulness check-ins and then, and let's say embarkment and disembarkment from meetings, which already helped, I think, in establishing our mindfulness and our focus that we have in our interactions. The other thing is I have a fantastic mentor, coach, friend, motivational leader that I go to, Dr. Ravi Rao, who is an author of a book called Emotional Business. He is a neuroscientist and neurosurgeon who has taken all of that knowledge of neuroscience and put it into the kind of business practices. He's ex-McKinsey and now
I'd love to have him on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, let's book him. So ex-McKinsey, current Disney advisor in LA. And I actually would bring him along and I still do have him come at least quarterly with my team, come together. And we do mindfulness exercises all designed around diversity, inclusion, trust. You know, I know I can feel the question that's coming from you, Thomas, which is, this all sounds very nice when you have people who are eager to do this. And sometimes what you actually will encounter is conflict. And actually this neuroscientist, Dr. Ravi Rao, has designed exercises where we simulate conflict, where we have conflict. Exercises that are designed to be confusing, where we have to find ways to communicate in new pathways that actually make us feel so frustrated. And as a result, we understand how to problem solve through conflict with each other. Even though it's an exercise, we can take that forward and project into, well, when we're in the real world and we have a conflict, a misunderstanding, when we don't have a structured way of how we need to solve problems or take decisions, what are the ground rules that we need to establish for ourselves? So he has us do those kinds of things based in, you know, rooted in neuroscience to help us create that cohesion. And ultimately, you know, it's very much a yes and kind of experience because it has to acknowledge, yes, this is the truth that we have And we are willing to collaborate. We're willing to problem solve together. We're willing to stay present and to explore challenging problems and to help solve challenging problems.
Wow. The first, Jen, compliments on knowing me already so well, obviously, after this short, very short time. It was exactly what was going on in my head. And also that was going on when Nick did his right phrase on the yes end. Now, very short story, and I keep it short. I had my biggest successes with my team when we were almost killing each other in conflict. If somebody from outside would have come into the room, would have been shocked, would have been taken back by the way we were communicating towards each other, it was certainly not in a yes and fashion. However, of course, we deeply trusted each other. We loved each other. And after such sessions, there was no issue about embracing each other and going for it. So I would like to know how you see that. Because yes, and look, I can say we should go to the left. Yes, and I think we should also go to the right. I'm being provocative now.
Yeah.
And how do you come forward with the yes and in that scenario?
Yeah, so with yes and in conflict, you know, yes and can be applied to everything. And I think a surprise for me in kind of my own year, you know, Nick starting his year in 2021 using yes and, in my own year 2020, really deliberately using the words and of course the mindset, using the words yes and in interactions in the professional environment. In conflict, I found it to be surprisingly one of the more effective ways to manage conflict and communication. And what that's rooted in is conflict is often arising when two people don't feel heard. You don't feel like you're listening to each other. It's also part of rule number two, right? But someone doesn't feel heard. And so when you offer your yes, it's establishing, I have heard you. I actually acknowledge your position. I've heard you. And I'm making a bridge to my point, my idea. It allows you, I mean, I think what I'm trying to say here is it allows you to have two differing points of view to still have a dialogue. Because often, you know, we talk about conflicts that become fractious where people fail to listen to each other and they're not productive conflicts. You're actually not building anything. You're not building a consensus. You're not building solutions. You're not building innovation. You're not building cohesion in your team. And if you're able to use this yes and words, really the words and the mindset in managing conflict, you're able to actually move forward. And I'm not proposing that we eliminate conflict. In fact, you know, where I live in a city where there are many of the world's top, you know, the top three of the top five biopharmaceutical companies are within 2 kilometers on each side of me right now. One of those companies, well, I've worked for both of those, but one of those companies had as one of the goals in the values is this person able to drive necessary conflict? Which for me was a real revolution, because conflict is necessary. It's necessary to sometimes, as you say, get to the next step, to get to the innovation, to get through the breakthrough, because it means it also, you know, taking steps back, it means you've designed for diversity, that you're inclusive, that every mind, every point that you have, every diverse mindset and diverse perspective is at the table. You will not agree. And therefore, you need to have a structure in place that allows for holding multiple points of view as you move forward. So yes, and as a way to manage conflict and bring those discussions, make them more productive in a very diverse environment, which you must have. You must have to create innovation, to get to that next level that humanity needs, not just that business environment needs. Yes, and is super, super powerful in managing conflict.
Yeah, it enables to have conflicts on tasks without having conflicts on persons or between persons. And just on a side note, yesterday I had a presentation about conflict management. And did you know that the Chinese sign for conflict are actually two signs? One is the sign for opportunity, and the other is the sign for danger. And so in the Chinese perspective, conflict is where opportunity and danger come together. Just on a side note. Jennifer, in the past 18 months, you and your team, you've evolved, obviously, by applying this on a daily basis and become, as you mentioned, highly performant. But I can imagine that the rest of the organization is maybe at a different pace in this journey. How do you experience that? Are you seen as a lone rider, or are you inspiring other teams, or can you give us some insights on that?
Nick, should we mention the famous word? Are you an unbossed island, Jen?
I would say yes, I'm an unbossed island in a bossed culture. And that's okay. That, you know, you have to start somewhere, right? It's been an interesting journey for me as a person, as an individual, as a leader, and me as a member of a function or leader of a function. I had someone say to me in a rather fractious committee, you know, when you're here, things just work. When you're here, you know, since you've been involved in this structure, this committee, this forum, I find that you bring people to the table, you bring the voices in, you bring the diversity in, you bring inclusion in. And we have conversations differently when you're in the room. So I think that's, you know, if that inspires the organization to incorporate some of these styles of way of being, way of leading, way of interacting, hopefully that's an inspiration. But you're right. I think it means that, you know, my team is successful in showing others the way of how to be autonomous, hold the accountability, be agile, and not just by a buzzword perspective, but really coming in and exploring problems together in a very unbossed, unhierarchical way, towards a North Star that is purposeful. I think that's what's really defining, is that the people who I'm working with in my function, they're led by a North Star. And when you have super hyper agility, you're in a VUCA world, everything's changing. Even your targets, your financial targets that you're going for, may be changing based on the VUCA world, like we've just seen this past year. If you still have your North Star of your purpose, you're still able to move forward. And I think that's a kind of leadership quality that the people that are in my team are able to model for the rest of the organization, which I'm really proud of, because that's, you know, when you're not in the room, that's when the magic, did it work, right? If you're not in the room, that's a test of the leader you've been. If your people are able to be the leaders themselves, then you've done your job of empowering them and strengthening them and building them to be able to be better.
Mm-hmm. Jen, I'm just letting that sink in. This mm-hmm. amazing compliment you got from a colleague who said, since you are here and when you are here, things just work. Mm-hmm. Let that sink in. This is amazing. Do I understand that right, Jen, that this compliment was given to you not... as even outside your team, do I understand that right?
Mm-hmm. Not in my team, other functional mm-hmm. area.
That's
other context, enterprise, in an enterprise-driven team, not a functional team at all. Yeah. In a friend.
That's amazing.
Thomas, I think we and our listeners are ready to hear from Jennifer the answer to our famous question.
The famous question. the fact that you have convinced me now, Jen, I'm the CEO of a traditional, very traditional conservative company, Jen. I have led my company now for the last 20 years in a very command and control way. We were reasonably successful, but I feel it. I know it, Jen. I have to go for unbossing. I have to go for the Jennifer way. And I am so deeply convinced, and I say that with all my heart, that I would like to start tomorrow. And now, Jennifer, what is the biggest mistake which I can do in order to, despite my good intentions, make a mess out of it and not to succeed?
So if your intention is to have a massive organizational change management plan towards unbossing, or whatever we're going to call it, because there are synonyms, right? So
yes.
Agile transformation, an autonomous transformation.
Empowerment.
Collaborative organizations, all those synonyms. Yeah.
And they're all noble goals. Go do it, because your organization will succeed and you will fail.
Mm-hmm.
You do a couple of things. Number one is, you know, you've hired... Hopefully you've hired the best people that you trust around you. If you have not involved your top managers in this transformation before you roll it out, so that they can be agents of change and ambassadors of change, of this new mindset, more than structure, it's the mindset that you're trying to roll out, this unbossed mindset, your yes and mindset. They need to be agents of change, and they need to be wildly enthusiastic about what it is that you're going to do. So involve them from the beginning, and then you can involve the rest of the organization. If you fail to do this, everyone's going to drop to the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and they're going to be concerned about their own personal welfare, their own personal status, yes, but even just, you know, am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my ability to support my family? So, and it's natural, because it's human, because we all have an amygdala, our lizard brain, and we're all going to fall down to that base of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So get your top leaders, whatever that is, that top 500, the top 10, whatever your organizational size is, that top echelon, get them involved, get them wildly excited. So that's number one. There are other things I'd love to share. The other thing is, you know, these agile transformations can succeed in a variety of different ways. Often it's about the people that you have around you. That's why number one is so important. Number two, you will absolutely fail if you do not change your performance management system that encourages that future mindset or future state or future structure that you are trying to encourage with your change. Because people are humans and they want to do the best they can. They will keep doing the same thing they did in the old model because that's what they know how to do.
And that's what they are being rewarded for.
And that's why you need to make that change. So really fix early in the process. Get your apostles of the plan. Get your wildly enthusiastic leaders who can support you, and get them to also bring in that new performance management system. I think the last thing I'll say is, you know, if this is really truly a decentralized, autonomous type of change management that you're going through, is watch how operational you are as a executive committee, as a top management committee. Mm-hmm. And that is to say that if you've asked your people to become empowered, to be accountable, to be decentralized, and they're going to make decisions in those bodies that you've created or the new organizational structure you've created, let them make those decisions. I think we've said, you know, put your hand as an executive, as the CEO, as an executive team, put your nose inside the tent and keep your hands out, because you've empowered your people to make those decisions. If you interfere with the decision-making in the decentralized level, you will lose trust immediately. That's my recommendations.
Jennifer, If you ever want to start a new venture outside of the pharma business, you are always welcome at Hive.
Thank you. I also strongly recommend that all of you experiment with this yes and mindset, yes and words. And if you really want to take it to the next level, try some improv comedy. And one of the companies that's around here, a Fortune 500 top 3 pharma company, I did that. I actually had a group of people around me where we had a lunch and laugh. We would meet monthly and we would do improv. People from different parts of the organization, we'd get together. And you know, at first we just did it for fun, but we realized the power of the creativity that we were unleashing, the collaboration that we had, the cohesion that we had. And several of us were working together in subgroups, and we actually created a new business model that's still being reported by the CEO of that company.
By Voss.
6 years old. By Voss. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, the power of this as a practice, yes, and as a practice, yes, and as a mindset, and even taking it further to play and using yes, and exercises in the form of improv in your workplace as a way to, you know, slice it any way you want to. Team building, great. Iterations and creativity and brainstorming and, you know, looking at new ways to come up with, to solve creative problems and solve wicked it problems, really, that you have that require lots of different mindsets. Use that. And you never know which happy accidents will happen along the way that will help you stumble onto solutions that actually could be your next big thing. And that's what happened to us when we were at Novartis. It was just a real thrill.
Jen, it's amazing. You are not only an inspiring leader, Jen, you are a missionary. Nick, I'm still inspired by Jennifer, and I'm sure you are as well, knowing very well also that you started our podcast with the yes and.
Yeah, absolutely, Thomas. I mean, in terms of key takeaways from this fantastic conversation with Jennifer, the improv comedy rules for unbossed business are a no-brainer, and I'll recapitulate them for our listeners one more time. Rule number one is a yes and mentality, but also really saying the words in dialogues, in discussions, yes and building forward on what has been said. Rule number two, listen and be present so that you can create in the moment. So truly listen and truly be present in the moment. Rule number three is don't try to be a star and serve others. Everyone is here to support everyone else. And rule number four is fail with joy. Now, I've been practicing on a daily basis these four rules since the beginning of January in my daily practices. And already now, 3 weeks in, I see immediate results. So this is to me a no-brainer. Now, if we dig a little bit deeper into the conversation, we talked a lot with Jennifer about conflict management and the way she reimagined conflicts from being something very destructive and harmful to something that can be very productive, something that we can learn from. And yes, if I benchmark this with, let's say, the blueprint of the journeys toward unbossed organization, I see that a new way of conflict management is one of 6 characteristics of an unbossed organization. And I'll go over the 6 characteristics very briefly of the unbossed organization. The first is, well, you flip your organizational structure from a pyramid to a decentralized organization. The second one is you transform functions, which have status and so on, into roles. The third characteristic are the decision-making processes, that you change from command and control decision-making to delegated advice-based decision-making. And the decisions are taken by those who experience the challenges or the problems and doing the work. Characteristic number 4 is that you have a number of crystal clear, non-negotiable rules that everybody in the organization needs to obey in order to play the game. Characteristic number 5 is that it's very clear to everyone which metric is used to measure success, and how we have a dialogue, how a dialogue is done about this performance, and how this dialogue can trigger action to improve. And the sixth characteristic is the way we manage conflicts. And so that resonated very strongly with me.
Fully agree with you, Nick. And now comes for me the interesting moment where also some listeners could say, hey guys, sounds a bit too good to be true. I do agree with you fully that these characteristics you just mentioned are the typical hallmarks of an unbossed organization. Meaning by that, you and I, we go somewhere, we see what's happening, and we say, this is an unbossed organization, truly. Now, I would like to talk about the inner glue which keeps that all together, which is what Jennifer calls the North Star. The purpose, the common vision, and the fact that we can trust each other, and we do trust each other, that all our conflicts we may have are always oriented on this North Star and nothing else. Meaning, you and I, we disagree on a certain way of going forward, but I know very well that you have nothing else in mind than this North Star. No ego trips, no hidden agendas, no kind of personal, ambitions. And that is the glue, this North Star, which brings an unbossed organization into the state in order to fulfill all these characteristics. Agree, Nick?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And you can tie that back literally to what Jennifer said about purpose. She said, even when all metrics in the organization, financial and other metrics, become unreliant because, for example, you have a pandemic and something happens and your entire dashboard is just shaking around, even when you are you have high emotions and discussions with your colleagues, as long as you have a purposeful North Star, you know that you are making progress together towards that North Star. And so it's basically the prime condition in order for all the rest to work. Now, Thomas, to close or to finalize and wrap up this key takeaway part of Jennifer's conversation, which of the three biggest mistakes that she mentioned do you really take away? Which one stands out?
For me, in terms of importance, what stands out for me once again would be failing to align and care about the mindset shift in the leadership team. It's by far the number one. And it's also the reason, Nick, why we are so much busy with exactly that at the beginning of every journey, with every client. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, in terms of importance, it's that one.
And it's a challenge.
A
challenge because leaders, they want to go into action right away. And here, involving people is all about having dialogue and listening to each other and saying yes and being present.
And fulfilling this role model thing and not sitting back saying to us, make me unbossed, guys, and tell me when it's ready. No, mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that. In terms of being funny, Nick, being funny was for me this. When you sit together in an executive team and you look at your minutes of your last meeting and you ask yourself, how much have we been busy with operational topics? Mm-hmm. And that is a fantastic, fantastic marker in terms of, are you unbossed? Are you on a good way of being unbossed? How much have you been busy with culture? How much have you been busy with the strategic points And how much have you been busy in the last meeting with the nitty-gritty of operations? A wonderful marker.
Yeah, and what a quote. As a leader, you put your nose inside the tent, but you keep your hands out of it.
So true. And then the number three, from my point of view, Nick, was if you would totally miss on adapting your compensation structure within HR towards unbossing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she explicitly said early on in the journey, adapt and reimagine your performance management system to the new mindset, the new skills, the new behavior that that you desire in the organization. And with that, Thomas, I think we can both say we wrap up an amazing conversation, and we can go off to the next one. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope that you've enjoyed this inspiring episode of the Unbossing Podcast. To round today's episode up, we would like to give the word to Thomas for a very special request.
Thanks, Nick. Dear listeners, if you would like to recommend to us other possible interview guests who did lead successfully or even unsuccessfully interesting and inspiring projects where they liberated their people from bureaucracy, gave them more freedom in order to do their work and their passion, please feel free to contact us. You find the contact details on our website.